Tonight's shiur, Parshas Tetzave. The Baal HaTurim says, at the beginning of the Seder, Lo hu hizkir Moshe b'zeh Seder. It's very strange. We don't find Moshe Rabbeinu's name anywhere in Parshas Tetzave. Masha'ein came b'chol ha'chumash. The whole chumash, we find Moshe Rabbeinu in every Parsha. Misha'ah shenolad Moshe. Ein Seder Shlo Iskarbar, from the time Moshe Rabbeinu was born in Shmos, every single Seder, Moshe's name is mentioned. Except for Parshas Tetzave. Why? What's the reason? Says the Baal HaTurim, Mishum Sha'amar Mecheni Na Misifracha Aksher Kasafta. Because in Parshas Kisisa, he asked the Kosh Baruch Hu to forgive the Jewish people after the Chet Egal. And he said, if you forgive them, good. If not, then I want you to erase me from your book, from the Sefer Torah. V'kilo l'schacha mafilo al tanai b'niskayim b'zeh. So even though when a chacha gives a curse, even if it's on condition, and the condition is fulfilled, Hashem did forgive them, still the fact that he uttered that statement of being erased from the book, Hashem was mekayim it, and how he's mekayim it, he kept it by erasing Moshe Rabbeinu from Parshat Tetzave. So an interesting hi'ara. The truth of the matter is, if you look at the entire Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is altogether not mentioned in 18 different parshias. How so? You have all the parshas in Bereishis, of course, because that was before he was born. So that's 12 parshas. And then you have another 6. You have Parshas Tetzave, a parsha here, and also Akiv, and Re'eh, and Shoftim, and Kiseitze, and Nitzavim. Altogether, 18. And this is hinted to also, Moshe Rabbeinu said, Mecheni na misifracha asher kasafta, if you add up all the letters, is 18 letters. It's a hint to the 18 parshas that he's not mentioned in the Torah. Also, another remez, he asked to be erased, Mecheni na misifracha asher kasafta. If you take the letters, asher kasafta, that's a remez to all these 18 parshas as well. How so? Aleph stands for Atem Nitzavim, starts with an Aleph. Shin, Shoftim. Asher, Aleph, Shin, Reish. Reish is Rei. Kasafta, Kaf is Kiseitze. Taf is Arsedra, Tetzave. Base is Bereishis, all say for Bereishis. And the Taf, Ekef Tishmuun. Vaya Ekef Tishmuun, that's the Taf. The Pasuk says, first Pasuk in the Sedra, Vata tetzaves b'nei Yisrael b'chu elech Hashem en zayisach, asis lamor la'alas ner tamid. So the question is asked, it should have said, like it says in other places, tzaves b'nei Yisrael b'chu elech Hashem en zayisach. Why say Vata tetzaves? Moshe Rabbeinu, you should command, just say, command b'nei Yisrael. What's this, you should command? So the Goral Gedaliyahu suggests that it's to hint at the fact that here HaKadosh Baruch Hu also wanted Moshe Rabbeinu to take for himself also, not just that the Kol Yisrael should take oil, but he has to also have a chelik in this oil, and therefore it's Viata, you Moshe Rabbeinu should take the oil, and also Tetzaves Ben Israel, they should also. What connection does Moshe Rabbeinu have to this olive oil? So he says, the Gemara says in Erevin, that had Moshe Rabbeinu not broken the first luchos, then the Torah would never be forgotten. The Torah was etched in, carved in the luchos, and there. So at that point, if anybody would learn the Torah, it would remain in them. Just like it was etched in and stayed in the blocks of the luchos, it would stay in a person. But once Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchos, what happened? The Midrash says the letters flew in the air. So since then, also, when we learn Torah, unfortunately, very often, just flies in the air. Just in one ear and out the other. Right? We forget the Torah. So that's because Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchos. That's what the Gemara says in Erevin. Mimele, what's the... how do you counter that? The Gemara says in Horius that olive oil, eating olive oil, helps you remember the Torah. So Mimele, since Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchos, so he caused Betzim Shichachas the Torah. And therefore Hashem says, also you Moshe Rabbeinu, take the olive oil here. Shem and Zayisach. Because olive oil counters the forgetting of the Torah. And since you had a chelik in the forgetting of the Torah, therefore also you Moshe Rabbeinu Israel, ve'ata titzavetz. You and Klaiso, but you also need a chelik in this olive oil, since you caused the forgetting of the Torah. And if you do that, then lahalos ner tamid, then you'll remember the Torah tamid. It'll be won't be forgotten so quickly. There's a midrash. Yalkut Shimoni says the following: Vikhu elecha shemen zayis velo shemen egozim, in olive oil, and not the shemen of nuts, velo shemen snonos, and not of radishes. Ela b'shemen zayis shehu oram leolam, which is the light forever. Question is, if you notice in the midrash, it refers to all the oils in plural, shemen egozim. It doesn't say shemen egoz. It says egozim. It says shemen snonos, plural. So why is it that we're referring to the shemen zayis? It's in singular. Shemen zayis. I should have said shemen zeitim, like the others. So the Imre Shammai answers based on the midrash. Midrash Tanchuma says the following: the Rabbi Chanina Skana Kohanim. He was a Kohen Gadol, right? Skan Kohen Gadol, and he says, "Ani ayiti mishamet beis hamikdash." He says, "I used to serve in the beis hamikdash." V'maisen nisim haya b'menorah. In the menorah, in the beis hamikdash, or nisim. What were the nisim? Mishayu madlikim osa mi Rosh Hashanah lo haisa mitkaveh ad shana acheres. When the menorah was lit on Rosh Hashanah, it stayed lit till the next Rosh Hashanah. So it didn't go out. So therefore, he suggests that's why maybe Shemen Zayit is written in singular, to hint to the fact that it only had to be lit one time a year. Lit on Rosh Hashanah, and that was it. It was good until the next Rosh Hashanah. If it was written singular, since it was a one-time lighting, that's what he suggests. The question that bothered me for a long time, and Baruch Hashem, I saw the question now. Every time Hanukkah rolls around, I have this question. And I thought it was asked, and I saw a very nice answer. We said over here, Rabbi Chanina Skanat Kohan, he says, I served the Beis HaMikdash, they lit the menorah Rosh Hashanah, lasts until next Rosh Hashanah. Question is asked, that's the case, so what's the big deal about Hanukkah? Hanukkah, we lit the menorah, right? We had enough oil for one day, and guess what? Lasted for 8 days. Big deal! When they used to light the menorah, it lasted for a whole year. So what was the big deal? Oh, 8 days it lasted. Oh, we made Chag, 8 days, Hanukkah, Hallel, that. Why? Because it lasted for 8 whole days. It lasted the whole year in the time when the Beis HaMikdash, when they lit the menorah. So what was the big deal? What's the big holiday about it? It lasted for 8 days. Saw a very nice answer. Following Marshall. Countries have within it embassies. Right? Eretz Yisrael, you have the Canadian embassy, American embassy, you have embassies. So the law of the embassy is that an embassy within a country has the din of not the country that it's in, but its own country. In other words, the American embassy, let's say, it has a din of America, even though it's in Eretz Yisrael here, but it's like a little America here in Eretz Yisrael. That's its nafkaminas, right? It's according to the law. It's immune to the laws of the country. You can't go into the American embassy and say, oh, I'm giving you a ticket or whatever, give it a fine or something to with the country, because it has nothing to do with the country. It's a din of America, not Eretz Yisrael. It's a little America here. So too with all the various embassies. However, of course, let's say the American embassy in Jerusalem says, okay, we're moving to Tel Aviv. Or maybe the opposite around. Okay, they move from Tel Aviv to Yerushalayim. Okay, they're moving the embassy. Now what happens if the embassy is moved? They leave the building, they move to another city. Now what? And what about the old buildings? They have a din of America? No. I mean, if they're there, as long as the embassy is there, fine. As soon as they move away, that building is now back to Eretz Yisrael, like everything else. So what's the nimshal? The Beis HaMikdash is like a little embassy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's embassy, his little house down here in this world. So as long as it's functioning, Hashem's embassy, the Beis HaMikdash is around and functioning. So Mele, of course there are Nisim. It's Hashem's house. Vada's place is going to be Nisim. Right? As we see the Pirkei Avos says, Omdim, 10 Nisim were right there with Omdim Ravachim, Omdim Tzufim, Mishlachmi Ravachim. There were millions of people would be in the Azara at the same time. They could like sardines. And then when they bowed down, they had a Dalit Amasar. It was miracles. But what? Not a surprise, because it's a little embassy. It's Hashem's house in this world. So it didn't have the same rules as this world. It's as the rules of Hashem. Ah. So therefore, the fact that the menorah lasted a whole year, okay, it's Hashem's house, it's his embassy, so big deal, all kinds of nisim. But what happened? The Hanukkah story was when the Greeks went in, they came, defiled the temple or whatever, it wasn't the embassy was closed down. Mainly we said when an embassy isn't functioning anymore, as back to the regular laws of the land. So here too, once the Greeks came in, it was back to the, it wasn't Hashem's embassy anymore, so it didn't have the rules of Hashem's embassy. So there was no nisim should happen. Yet they lit the menorah, that should have lasted for one day with the oil, it lasted for 8 days. That's something to celebrate, because there shouldn't have been any nisim, because it wasn't Hashem's embassy anymore, it was when they moved out, Hashem packed out. So therefore, there's something special about the Nes of Hanukkah. Says that the Shemen Zayis was Kasit LaMa'or. And the Ma'or is hinting to the Ma'or of the Torah, the light of the Torah, Lahalos Ner Tamid. So they darshan out. We see from here that Torah has to be Lahalos Ner Tamid, has to be constant. It can't be a little bit here, a little bit there. In order for Torah to be successful in the world, it has to be constant. And one of the figures in history who aided in having the Torah be something constant was Rav Meir Shapiro Milivlin. He was, of course, the founder of the Daf Yomi. And that was the idea. You know, he wanted to keep the Torah that should be constant, that keep people constantly learning, instead of schmoozing about this and schmoozing about the news and what's happening. So everybody had a common thing, the Daf. Right, everybody's learning the same stuff, holding on the same page. So when you meet your friend from the other side of town, hey, how you doing? Oh, did you hear this report and that? Because everybody's holding in the same place. So it keeps the Torah constant. It's interesting when Rav Meir Shapiro came up with this idea of the Daf Yomi, he was a young man. And he went to the Chafetz Chaim with this idea. He says, I have an idea, everybody should be learning the same Daf, whatever, Daf Yomi. So Chafetz Chaim said, wonderful idea. I think you should, you know, spread the word. So he said, Rebbe, it's not going to work. I'm a young man. Who's going to listen to me? I mean, like, you know, I'm not this old, big old Rav. You know, everybody's going to, nobody's going to listen to me. I have an idea. They're going to laugh at me. So Chafetz Chaim said, okay, I have an idea. He says, coming up soon is the big kenes, the Moetzes Gedoli Torah of Agudas Yisrael. All the Gedolim, everybody's going to be there. So he says, I want you to come and suggest, bring up the idea there. But you must come 5 minutes late. Just do what I say, said Chafetz Chaim. You're gonna bring up the idea, just come 5 minutes late to the kenneth. So he says, okay, fine. Didn't understand what it's all about, but Chafetz Chaim says, fine. So everybody gathers, all the gedolim, Chafetz Chaim's there at the head table with all the other, you know, great, great rabbis, and people are there. Finally, everybody gets settled in their seats, and sure enough, doors open, and who walks in? Meir Shapiro, 5 minutes late. So he walks in. As soon as he walks in, the Chafetz Chaim gets up, stands up for him. Everybody looks and says, whoa, Chafetz Chaim standing up for this young, wow, he must be something, everybody stands up, everybody stands up. Chafetz Chaim says, okay, now you can tell you want, everybody's going to listen to you. So the Rav Shapiro, he looked at the Gemara and he says, you know, this is a great way of uniting all of Klal Yisrael. Like you said, everybody should be holding in the same duff. There's even a hint, he says, in the Ben Ish Chai says, in the first word in Shas, Me'ei Masai, is the same letters, says, Ani Yehuda Mechaber Mishnah Torah Hashem. It's a hint to Yehuda Nasi, that's Mechaber the Mishnah. And he said, where is Yehuda Nasi from? Eretz Yisrael. He's Mechaber the Mishnah in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara was, who wrote the Gemara? Ravina Ravashi. Where are they from? From Bavel, from Iraq. Who's the Iker Parish on the Gemara? Rashi. Where is he from? France. And the Rif, when you go then to the Halachas, the Rif, where's the Rif from? Rav Yitzhak from Fes, from Morocco. And the Ran, he's from Spain, Sfarad. Marsha, the Maram, famous commentators, where are they from? Poland. He says you have the whole gamut, the whole world surrounding the Gemara. So that's the power of Torah, and that's, he says, you have to miyachid everybody through the Daf Yom. Sedra deals with the Big De Kahuna, beginning of Perek Kafches, Vasisa, Big De Kodesh, Lamran Achicha, Lachavarot Sifaras. So unfortunately, people very often, they judge their fellow man by the clothing they wear. Right? They'll, well, that, who he is what he wears. That's who he is. They judge him. Without who he is inside, that's not important. It's important how he's dressed, what he looks like. There's an interesting maysa with Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra is very, very poor. He was very poor. He was so poor that he used to say about himself, yeah, you know, whatever I touch, fall doesn't, nothing amounts to anything. So if I would go in the candles business, he said the sun wouldn't set. So now if I would go into business of making tachrichin shrouds, people wouldn't die. So I had this like no luck when it comes to Parnassa. So he was a very poor man, and poor men dressed like poor men. Obviously, he's not going to wear a fancy suit. He was poor. Everything, you know, old ripped clothing, whatever. And that's all he had. So once he was traveling, and he came to a certain town, and he needed a place to stay. So he approached this wealthy yid, and he says, "Do you mind if I stay by you, eat by you, whatever?" So he, you know, looked at him in his, you know, ripped clothing, or whatever, and he's like, he felt uncomfortable to say no. So he says, "Okay, fine." You know. So he brought him in, but when he had his meal, the suda, he didn't want him, you know, where he looked to be, you know, with that. So he put Ibn Ezra at the end corner of the room where, you know, people couldn't even stick out like a sore thumb. Put him in the corner over there. So then Ibn Ezra saw that, you know, he was judging him by his clothing. So he wanted to teach him a lesson. So Motzei Shabbos rolled around, and he approaches the Balabas, the rich guy, and he says, "You know what?" He says, I understand you're talking, you have a daughter, you're looking for a shidduch. I have a bacher, unbelievable bacher for you. He's here in this town right now, and he's vashu, unbelievable. Huge, huge Talmud Chacham, huge. Right? He can answer shilas from all the gedolim. He's like, psh. So he's really, he's all kind of excited. Yeah, you think you can arrange something? He goes, yeah. So he picks some bacher up that, he doesn't know anything, a boor Yom Haaretz, but he dresses him up really nicely, fancy suit and tie and porcelain, looks like great. So he brings him in and he says, "Here's a bacher." So the rich man is like, "Wow, looks very impressive, you know." He says, "Yeah, he's unbelievable, but he's so, you know, into his learning in it that he doesn't talk so much. So here's what we're going to do. I'll put him in this room over here with some, shas. And you can call all the Rabbanim, all the Gedolim, whatever. Tell them to come, the Talmid HaChachamim, with kashas, shailas. And you just tell me the shailas. I'll bring it into him and I'll tell you what he says." So he says, fine, great idea, whatever. So he puts him in a room. Yeah, this guy knows nothing, you know. Put him in a room. And Ibn Ezra, of course, you know, Gedoli Rishonim. So these big Talmid HaChamim are lining up and saying, "Okay, I have this kasha, whatever." So he goes into the room as if to ask this guy Bachar a question. But of course, he's not asking me. He doesn't know anything. He just says, "Just be quiet and I'll take care of this." And then he waits a few minutes, comes back out and tells the answer, of course, his own answer, the Ibn Ezra answer. Right? And the next guy goes in and there he says, "This guy's unbelievable. This Bach is a genius. He's answering all our kashas." Anyway, that was it. You know, the Balabai says, "That's it. I want him for a chassan." It's wonderful. So they make a tanaim, you know, break the plate. Mazal tov, erisin. Oh, everybody's happy, whatever. Then the Ibn Ezra said, "Okay, I'm not going to be a shamash anymore. Here, you can deal with him directly now." So they start speaking to him. You see, he doesn't know anything. Nothing. You tricked us. That's not fair. Why'd you do this to us? So the Ibn Ezra said, "Listen," he says, "I saw that you mechabed clothing. You know, yeah, that's important to you. So therefore, I said, okay, fine. So I bought a bacher that all he is clothing and nothing else. That's what's important to you. So here you have it. Here, bacher with the clothing." So the Balabai says, "But now what? Now what? He's engaged to my daughter. What should I do?" So he says, don't worry, I see you learned your lesson. Now leave him with me, I'll teach him. And he sat with him for a few months and he became an Emes HaTalmud Chacham. Next. It's a beautiful idea from the Chasam Sofer. Pasuk says, V'ata tedaber al kol chachmei lev, Hashem ilesi v'ruach chachma. Hashem says, now Moshe, I want you to go and speak to the chachmei lev, to the wise-hearted people, Asher milesiv ruach chachma, that I filled him up with ruach chachma, with wisdom. So he makes an interesting observation. He says the diktuk doesn't work here. Why? Milesiv is singular. I filled him up. But we're talking in plural. We're talking about the chachmei lev. He says, v'atate daber el, speak to who? The chachmei lev, in plural, the chachamim. That I filled him up with Ruach Chachma. It shouldn't say I filled him, it should say I filled them up. That I filled them up with Ruach Chachma. Not him, we're talking in plural. So Chamsoy says a gewaltig word. He says, you have to read it like this. V'ata tedaber al chachmei lev. Speak to the chachmei lev. The people that have in their heart chachma. But what? They might not know that they have this potential. They might not know, they might not realize that they have this chachma. So I want you to speak to them. And you know what I want you to tell each and every one? Asher meleisiv ruach chachma. That I filled him up with chachma. In other words, this is what you should tell each one. Tell each one that, you know, Hashem filled you up with chachma. Meaning, he says, very often a person has tremendous potential, but he doesn't realize it because he doesn't realize that he has the potential. So therefore he doesn't realize the potential. In other words, he has chachma, he has whatever, great talents and things, but he doesn't even know he has it. So if you bring it out, or he might know he has it, but he doesn't do anything. So if you give him the push and give him the encouragement and say, no, you can do it, you've got this, and you give him the encouragement, then he'll bring it out. He says, I'll quote, he says the following, "Bilibot ha'nashim chachma natua." He says, in the hearts of people, there's this hidden chachma. It's ingrained. "Im yavo mishi yarem alzev," a person will come along and awaken it, then "yotzi atamu nahu," this hidden treasure is going to come out. V'yigalele in kol, be revealed to everybody. V'imlav, and if not, yenelam, it'll just be gone. It'll disappear. It's there, but it's not going to come out. So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was, Hashem was telling Moshe Rabbeinu. These people have Ruach Chachma. I want you to go and tell them that they have Ruach Chachma, so they can bring it out. That's the Asher Melesiv Ruach Chachma. A beautiful story. A friend said this actually in this year, this last week. Says there was a small town in America where there was an older man that he mamash built up Torah-wise this whole community, right? He brought a school there, a shul there, everything. He was the mastermind beholder behind the whole community. So they asked him, what brought you to do this? They knew he came from a family he wasn't even from. And so how could a person that comes from a family like that be such a life source and you know, create a community, a Torah community? So he says, I'll tell you what happened. He says, I was a bacher, or mitzvah bacher, and we lived in some other small town. And these small towns, I mean, what was a bar, in those days, what a bar mitzvah bacher do? Okay, maximum he reads maftir, says haftorah, and that was it. So fine, I had my aliyah, said the haftorah. So after davening, I said the kiddush or a little kiddush or whatever. He happened to have overheard two balabatim speaking to another. He says one of them says to the other one, he says, "Did you hear that bar mitzvah bacher today? Psh, he was good. He was good, good." So friend says back to him, "Yeah, he was good, but let's see if he'll beer for mincha." In other words, okay, good. I mean, that's it. Then goodbye. You never see him again. So let's see if he'll come back for mincha. So the first one says, "No, I think he's going to be here for mincha. Why? Because I don't know." He says, "This bacher is different. This bacher is different." He overheard this. He says, "Those words carried me through my whole life. Those words of this bacher is different." So he said, "I'm different. I'm different." He says, "I'm different." And he took that with him, and he went on to yeshiva. He went on to move into a community, and he built a community, like we said. All he said, my whole life, those words were ringing in my ears. This bacher is different. So he sees the power of just the right words, like the Chasam Sofer says, Shemili Sivra, tell him that he has potential. Tell him potential, you don't have to take it that far after that. It goes off on its own. He has to bring that out, bring out his potential. We see from this beautiful story. Pasuk says, Vayal Aaron l'sharis v'nishma kolo b'vor l'kodesh, referring to the me'il. The me'il had on the bottom of the me'il these bells. And it said that Aaron wore them when he was came in b'vor l'kodesh. So, question is asked, and it's one of these Pashta questions and even more Pashta answers. The question is, it's not true, l'chora. The Pasuk says that he wore the me'il b'vor l'kodesh. But we know that the Kohen Gadol, when he serves in Yom Kippur, and he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he doesn't wear the Me'il. Right? The famous Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Right? Why doesn't the Kohen Gadol wear his A clothing when he goes into Kodesh HaKadoshim? She'in Kategor Nasa Sanegor. So Dafka, he doesn't go in into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with his Me'il. He doesn't. So what's the Pasuk telling us? And furthermore, it's interesting that in Parshas V'yakel, when there's a repetition of all these different things that we learn in these couple of Parshas, there it also mentions the Me'il, Pamon V'rimon, etc. And there it says it was worn L'Shares, to serve, but it doesn't say there before Elokodesh. Why not? So, Rav Zumer answers both together. Beautiful, simple, simple answer. He says that really the Kohen Gadol was meant to wear the Shmoneh Begavim. He was meant to wear the Me'il, etc., going into the Kodesh Kodesh. That's the way it should have been, as it has in this week's Sedra. But what happened? In next week's Sedra came what? The Chet Egel. The Egel of Zahav. Mela, after that, the Egel of Zahav, now that he couldn't go in anymore to the Kodesh Kodashim wearing his gold clothing. Why? In Kateger, Nasas, and Eger. Kateger for what? For the Chet Egel. Mimela in Parshas V'yakel, which comes after Parshas Kisisa, there, then he couldn't anymore wear the Me'il inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Therefore it doesn't say over there again, B'vor El HaKodesh. Because he can't wear it anymore. Why? It's after the Chet Egel. Ein Kateger, Nasa Saneger. Everything's beautiful. It says that the Kohen Gadol, we know when he came into the Kodesh, had the Me'il had these bells on it. So the Gemara says in Psachim, Kufyad Beis Hamad Aleph, that Shiva Dvarim Tziva Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yeshua Beno. Rabbi Akiva told his son, Rabbi Yeshua, seven things. And one of them was, Shalo Yikanes Labeito Piton. That when you go into your house, you shouldn't barge right in. You know, open the door, goes directly in. You should knock first. Whatever, make some noise. Like, okay, I'm coming. You know, make known that you're going to barge right into your house. That's your own house, of course. Kol shekein l'bayitchev chaveroh, your friend's house, of course. And where did they learn this from? Rashi brings. We learn it from the Me'il that the Kohen Gadol is going to Kodesh HaKadoshim, but he rings his bells before he goes in. You know, ring the bell, the doorbell. Doesn't this go straight into the Kodesh HaKadoshim? And the bells ring. Ring the bell first on his clothing. Me'il, we learn from there. You don't just barge in. So, ask the Slobodka Slabodka, he says, wait a minute. How can you learn one from the other? Look who we're talking about here. We're talking about here who? The Kohen Gadol. He's the holiest person around. Where is he going in? To the holiest place around in the world. Where? The Kodesh HaKadoshim. And when? On Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the year. The holiest time to the holiest place with the holiest person. So there, maybe you have to, you know, knock before you go in. But what does that have to do with me going into my house or going home for dinner and I have to knock on the door? Says the Slavim Slabodcha, what do we see from here? Say, yeah. Because we see from here that there's no such thing as a Pashta Yid and a Pashta house. Every Yid is Chashiv like the Kohen Gadol, and every house is like the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, yeah, we can learn from the Kohen Gadol going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur, because every day and every house and every Yid is special. Just like the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the Kohen Gadol, so we can learn from that. At the end of the Sedra talks about the Mizbeach HaKtoras. So the question is asked, why is it brought at the end? The end of everything really should have brought in Truma. We mentioned the various Kalim. Here's brought at the end. Why brought at the end? It's a nice vort from a Valach. It says the following. It says the various Kalim of the Mishkan all represent different midos that a person has to have. For example, the Aron. The Aron had the measurements were all none of them were full measurements. The teacher, when it comes to Torah, right, the Aron has to be, you have to be humble. And also the luchos, the broken luchos were in there, also represents humility. The menorah was pure gold, represents a person has to be pure in his midos, and it was the Shem and Zayis also, Zach had to be pure. The shulchan, which had the lechem apanim, represents how your parnas has to be kosher, and your eating has to be kosher, etc. The mizbeach ha'ola, that they offer the sacrifices, burn them up, represents the mesiris nefesh, represents the moser nefesh, etc., etc., etc. That's all the various midos a person has. So, but then what? Then at the end, we have the Be'er Sektoris. What's Be'er Sektoris? Be'er Sektoris, it's a skula, right? It says that by a bris, right? The sandek, he's like, you mark their Torahs, and therefore, it's a segula to get rich, right? The Gemara says a yoma, that they used to make sure that not the same coin did the Torahs because of segula to get rich. Another school we saw by Aaron used the Torahs to ward off the Magefa. So it has skulas, the Torahs. Memela, the lesson here is, skulas are very nice, but that's only after you've already purified your midos, and you're pure, and you're parnasa, and you're moser nefesh, and you're eating, and everything is tip-top, then you can, at the end, you can do things that, do the skulas. But you don't jump and just do the skulas. It's only after all the hard work, then you can go on to the skulas. End off one last on the cute side. Gabi the Mizbeach, it says that the dimensions, right? Ama arko, ama arach, ama rachpo, ravuye. It was the length was an ama, width was an ama, and it says it was square, ravuye. So the grandson of the Ger Rebbe, when he was in Cheder, he asked his Rebbe Akasha. He says, I don't understand. The Torah said it was a length an amma, a width an amma, and it was squared. Why do you have to say it was square? If it's length and width were an amma, so of course it's square. What else could it be? So why did it have to say ravuah? Yeah, should have just said length amma, width amma, fairness. Not to say and it was square. Of course it's square. So he said, good kasha, I never thought of it. He says, when you come home for Shabbos, ask your grandfather, your Rebbe. Let's see what he says. So he comes back on Sunday, and he said, Nu, did you ask your grandfather? He goes, yeah. He says, Nu, what did he say? He said, he told me the following. He says, you wouldn't know it's square necessarily. He goes, why not? He said, because it could have been triangle. Right? Length and width is an amma, but it doesn't have to be square. It could be a triangle. Three sides. But it's the one way in the end, up and down. This is both an amma, but it's triangle. It's not a square. Therefore, the Torah has to say ravuyeh. It has to be square. So he said, "Okay, I hear." But the Rebbe thought for a minute, the Cheder Rebbe, and he says, "But wait a second. I got another question. Then, if that's the case, then all it had to say was that it was an amma in length, ravuyeh." Didn't have to tell me also the width. If you just tell me it was in length, let's say an amma, and it was square, mainly I know the width is also an amma. Because once you're telling me it's squared in one direction, all you have to tell me is one side, because all four sides are equal. So all it has to say is amma in the length, and that's it. So he told him to ask his Rebbe, his grandfather, but I don't know, he never did. But when he grew up, he found the answer himself. It's actually a Gemara in Zvachim that says that when it says in the Torah Ravua, even though in Ribua, like in modern Hebrew, means square, but in the Torah it doesn't necessarily mean it. All it means when it says Ravua in the Torah is that it has four corners. That's what it means. Memela, Ravua, you can't just say it had the length, it was an amma, and it had four corners, because it could have been a rectangle. Can be long and it isn't just four corners and one of the sides is an amma. You don't know what the other side is. Memela, that's why the Torah had to say amma this way, amma that way, and it was squared. So you know it was all four corners, but each side was equal. That it was mamasha square. Also zeicha to see all these kalim and the big day kahuna in real life soon. Bekarbi yomenu, with the coming of biach Mashiach sinkenu v'imhirav yomenu.